And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Well, many of us know that climate change is real and that it is messing up the economy, right? We've seen in Texas where the recent freeze in Texas didn't just hurt people in the moment, but there was destruction to many homes. And there's going to be a long-term ripple effect of how does Texas rebuild from having so many damaged homes from what's ostensibly a climate event? We look forward to this coming summer. There were fires in California. They're talking about a huge drought. All those things affect people's livelihoods and cost money. And that money cost ripples through the system of ripples to the economy has great consequence. And that consequence needs to be dealt with. And in order to discuss that topic, we are thrilled to have with us Vina Ramani, who is the Senior Program Director for the Ceres Accelerator Initiative, which I think is located here in Boston, but is a nationwide nonprofit. Welcome, Vina. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Ted. How are you?
That's great. Great to have you with us. So I have a little bit of intro there about the risk of climate to the financial system. And I guess I'm interested to hear, you know, what the take on it all. But first of all, can you tell me, what is Ceres as a nonprofit? What does it try to do?
Great. So, Ted, Ceres is a nonprofit that's been around for 30 years. You're right. We're based in Boston, but we are focused on national and global issues, and we tend to work with national and global companies and investors. So we are a sustainability nonprofit. Our approach is to work with leading companies, investors, and policymakers to address the greatest sustainability challenges of our time, including the climate crisis, water scarcity, you know, racial inequities, just and equitable systems, etc. And we do this by largely leveraging the power of networks. So we work with groups of companies and groups of investors to get them to address and act on these environmental and social issues as business risks and business opportunities. And we also work with some of the largest companies and investors in the country and the world so that, you know, when they move, they take the industry along with them.
Well, thank you, Vina. Now, it turns out that you are the lead author on a report that recently was published by Ceres. Very interesting report that this basically talks about the need to address climate change as a systemic risk. And before I'm dying to hear about what you discovered in the report, but there's two sort of vocabulary words I think people need to hear about. I mean, we're going to talk about financial systems, which to most people, they think of their checkbook, but it's a much bigger deal. So the second question will be, what is a systemic risk? I mean, you know, what does that mean as far as a financial system goes? So tell me, what do you regard as the financial system?
Yeah, and I have to say, I kind of enjoy your analogy of a checkbook because you're not super far off. I think a checkbook is a microcosm of what we're talking about really at a macro level. So a financial system is a system by which money moves in our market, right? So you have investors, you have banks. These are people who have money, right? You have, what investors and banks want to do is they want to make investments so that they can grow their money, much like, you know, you or I would invest in a savings account, or if we're a little bit more adventurous, we would invest in stocks or bonds to essentially grow our savings, right? That's, you know, very similar to what investors and banks are looking to do as well. They're looking to grow their investments, right? They sit on one side of markets, the financial system. On the other side of financial systems are companies. Companies want money. They want money in order to be able to grow their operations. They want money in order to be able to invest in a particular asset. They want money to do research on a new product that they want to potentially use to, again, you know, grow their market share, for instance. And financial system is the system by which companies who want money signal that they want money, and investors and banks who have the money figure out who they give their money to. That's how, that's financial markets. That's the financial system within which we operate. Now, for this system to function well, we need certain rules of the road, right? And one very important rule of the road, for instance, is disclosure. Because unless you have a system of reliable information, unless investors and banks can rely on the information that companies are providing to them, they can't make smart decisions on who they give their money to versus not. So that's kind of the, and it's the responsibility of financial regulators to make sure that financial systems function in a way that's efficient and equitable for both companies on one hand and for investors and financial institutions on the other.
So that begs the question, in terms of systemic risk, and how does that fit into, you know, something goes wrong with that financial system, what might happen? What's the big fear?
So a systemic risk is a risk to the system, right? It's sort of, it's there in the name. And we are living under the impacts of a systemic risk right now. The coronavirus pandemic is an example of a systemic risk. A systemic risk is a risk that's so significant. It's not just financial, it's not just material. A material risk is a risk that's so significant that companies need to disclose it to their investors. They're bound by law to disclose it to their investors. They're bound by law to actually bring it up to their board. A systemic risk is a risk that's not just financial, it's not just material. It poses a threat to the very stability of global financial markets. And what we've learned, if you just let me finish, what we've learned about a systemic threat is that there's no hiding from a systemic threat. Everybody has skin in the game when it comes to a systemic threat. There's no diversifying away from a systemic threat.
In I guess my question is, the systemic risk, the risk is that this financial transfer of money, the signals that are sent back, that collapses. It stops working, right? That's the systemic risk. Because you describe the systemic risk as people with money and people who want money, and the feedback between those things. If systemically, if that stops working, it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of like 2009, where everything just stops because nobody trusts anybody, and everyone, and the consequences of that for the greater society are enormous, right?
Yeah, and again, that's a really astute observation, and your connection back to the 2008 financial crisis is spot on. Because what happened in the 2008 financial crisis is that financial institutions did not understand the risks that they were taking on. Right. And they didn't understand it in part because they were working very fast. They had incentives to make money in the short term. And they also didn't understand it because they didn't have, you know, a ton of transparency into these market-backed securities that they were investing in. And again, you're seeing a version of that. I know we're going to talk about climate change in a second. You're seeing a version of that play out when we're thinking about the notion of climate posing a systemic risk to financial markets as well. Because a part of what we're seeing is that, you know, there's clearly a systemic impact associated with the climate crisis. You began your podcast talking about the physical impacts of climate change, which we're seeing play out as we speak. There's also something called a transition risk associated with the climate crisis. And the transition risk is the fact that a lot of companies and investors as well have made bets about the future, right? They've made bets about the future with a certain assumption as to how the future will look in terms of reliance on fossil fuels. And the reality is that the way in which our world relies on fossil fuels is going to evolve. There's going to be what we see as an inevitable transition to a low carbon or even a net zero economy. And that means that some bets that companies have made are going to really succeed, and some bets that companies and financial institutions who support them have made are not going to succeed, that they are going to fail, we worry, somewhat spectacularly. And because some of these companies and financial institutions and the scale of these investments are so large, we worry that the failure of these bets is again going to have a market-wide impact, right? That's an example of a systemic risk. Right. And the other thing about the climate crisis that we've learned is that the impacts, like the physical impacts and the transition impacts, they don't exist in silos. They interact with one another, they magnify each other, And we don't really have a handle on how that magnification plays out. So it's the uncertainty associated with this interaction and magnification, which is also a systemic risk. The fact that 1 + 1 doesn't always equal to 2.
That is a clear and wonderful explanation and description of, I think, where we are. So I really appreciate that. So that's a great segue. You have authored this report published by Ceres, which talks about it. So I guess I please continue. Lay out the case for what you've recognized as a risk, and then what kind of recommendations? What should people be doing? I know that the report has 50. We'll never get through all 50, but tell us what's the theme, I suppose, of the kinds of things that have to happen.
Sure. So again, there are two reports we released. We released a report last June, which makes the case that climate change is a systemic risk. And I mentioned before the role of financial market regulators, right? These are folks who are the intermediaries of financial markets, sort of sitting between companies and investors to make sure that markets function in a way that's efficient, that's reliable, that's fair, and that actually helps contribute to the resilience of the system writ large. And these are folks like the Federal Reserve, the Securities and Exchange Commission. There are regulators for various industries that I'll talk about in just a minute. But these are folks to make sure that the game is being played in a fair way. And these are, many of these regulators also are responsible for ensuring the stability of financial markets. So the case that we make is that if climate change, given that climate change is a systemic risk to financial markets, we believe that US financial regulators have a role to play in addressing the systemic risk of climate change. And when we issued this report in June of last year, the US financial regulatory community was not doing anything to address climate change risk. So what we did in our original June 2020 report is we laid out 50 recommendations that can be captured into 4 buckets, sort of saying, you know, here is what financial regulators should do. And those 4 buckets are, we called on financial regulators to affirm the systemic risk of the climate crisis. We called them to integrate climate change into their prudential supervision. So you have a lot of, you know, you have financial institutions, you have banks, you have regulators that just focus on the banking industry, you have insurance companies, you have regulators that just focus on the insurance sector, you have the commodities market, you have a regulator that's focused on the commodities market. We say, hey, each of these institutions have these industries are exposed to climate change risks. So we call on the regulators of those industries to integrate climate change into the way that they supervise the industries in question. That's what prudential supervision means.
Okay, yep. That was going to be my question. What does prudential supervision mean?
This is acronym and jargon land here, so I'm happy to help clarify to the extent that I can. We also call financial regulators to issue rules for really requiring companies, investors, and financial institutions to disclose their climate change exposure and their climate change performance and their climate change plans. And I'll talk about that.
Can you just put that? I think that means someone like, I don't know, I'm hung up on Liberty Mutual or Exxon. Liberty Mutual should say, yeah, we have a huge amount of money insuring a coal plant, the Adani coal plant in Australia or something. Everyone ought to know about that because they could have a big loss. That's the kind of thing you're referring to, right?
That's exactly what we mean by climate risk exposure. We think every corporation, every investment firm, and every financial institution should really first run the analytics, first sort of run their internal numbers just to understand, you know, their investments and their exposure to climate change. We want them to then, essentially do the thinking on how this exposure affects their strategy, right? Like they have a strategy, to continue functioning in the long term. How is that strategy, how is their performance going to be affected by their exposure, and to make choices? And we want them to disclose all of this information because we believe it's relevant. Mm-hmm. For their financial their financial institutions to know this information. We think it's relevant for investors to know this information, and we think it's relevant for their regulators to know this information. So we call on companies and investors do provide some disclosure on their climate change performance. That's actually been growing. But because there are no rules, you know, it's a little bit like the Wild West out there. Everyone kind of figures out their own way of doing it. People use different standards. People pick and choose the indicators they want to pick and choose to make them look good, right? So we want regulators to really issue rules requiring climate change disclosures that's actually going to produce information that investors, that regulators, and that companies themselves can use to compare themselves with their peers and, again, make smart choices going forward. And finally, we call on financial regulators to coordinate with themselves to make sure that any approach to climate change regulation, you know, is a coordinated and collective one. If you take a look at maps of the U.S. financial regulatory ecosystem, I've heard it described as a bowl of spaghetti, because it's really complex and intertwined, and there's clearly an internal logic at play, but there's a lot of overlap between regulatory jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, and that everyone can build on each other's learnings, because we don't have time to make a lot of mistakes, right? The climate crisis is upon us. Our window for action is limited. We need folks to cooperate with each other, learn from each other, and take sort of collective best thinking forward in their approaches to regulation on climate change.
And great description. I guess what was running through my head is that the hammer, so to speak, of disclosure is that the investor who's holding money gets to make an informed choice about where she's going to put her money. And if a company has exposure, again, I mean, is at risk because they're investing in something that is either going to be outlawed or is going to be destroyed by rising seas, either one, I mean, the bottom line is that they're not going to receive the investments, right?
Yeah, that means their investments, you know, they lose money on their investments, and they deserve to know that information as they make choices on where to put their money.
Now, tell me, here's a slightly, okay, no, I mean, please, I got a million questions. Tell me more about the report. I mean,
So that's the report we released in June. And then we released another report actually just a couple of weeks ago, where, you know, we looked at, you know, how the world has changed over the past 10 months. And the reality is the world's changed quite significantly and relevantly for what I do. We have a new administration that is much more forward thinking on climate change. And so even since November, which is, you know, in the scheme of things, not very long ago, we've seen a sea change in the way that U.S. financial regulators are starting to address this issue. So we're starting to see a number of financial regulators do some of what we called for in our June report, including affirming climate change. And again, starting to take those initial steps in terms of getting their internal house in order to start to activate climate change as a part of their mandate, which is what we call on in our June report. And so this report that we released a couple of weeks ago, it does two things. It actually assesses the progress of U.S. financial regulators in acting on the recommendations we've made in our June report, at least starting to take those initial steps. And we find, I mean, it's always a good news, bad news scenario, right? The good news scenario is that more regulators are starting to affirm climate change risk than certainly we'd seen 10 months ago. And that's not a small thing, especially given the scope and the scale of some of the regulators we're talking about. The Fed's been busy doing other stuff as well, certainly over the past, you know, year and a half. But they have really taken strides in recognizing that climate change is a stability risk, and sort of saying that they expect climate change to be integrated into the prudential supervision process. And the reason that's important is because smart companies aren't going to wait for regulation, right? Smart companies are companies who see the writing on the wall and then start to proactively get their internal house in order to really do the kind of risk assessment, scenario analysis on climate change that the Fed will, you know, Fed or banking regulators would write into regulation, certainly if they follow the playbook we've seen from other financial regulators. But just to sort of finish the story of the new report, we find that while some major financial regulators have started to take those initial steps in terms of addressing climate change, many of them still have not, which is, again, scary when you think about just this immensity of the problem that we see before us. And we also find that though even those regulators who've taken action are very much at that initial stage. So what this new report does is we call on, again, regulators to act now, but we also sort of outline very specifically what we want regulators to do right now on climate.
Wow. Well, so let me ask one more question, and then I'm going to beg you to come back for another show to talk about what the administration's doing. But the way I see what you're saying is that the financial markets have a role. Two things. The financial market needs to protect itself because it's the grease that makes the economy go. Yep. And ultimately, we want to reduce carbon dioxide and emissions. And the way that that would happen is by revealing the risk and having the investors back away with their money. So it's kind of a second order effect for carbon dioxide. Yep. But at another level, it's saying we need to have the financial system operating if we're going to do all the good things we want to do. And so you got it. Keeping the financial system functioning is an end in itself. And the way to keep the financial system operating is to make sure that there's not hidden risks that we aren't telling ourselves about. Is that fair? Yeah.
No, that's exactly right. And I think you hit on something that we don't do a good enough job talking about, which is sort of making the point that this is not just moving money away from polluting sectors, sort of heavy carbon sectors. It's also moving money to where investments need to go, right? It's about investments in clean energy. It's about investments in renewable energy. It's about investments in energy efficiency. Everything that we need to do to really create that fundamental structure associated with this net zero economy that we need to create essentially in the next decade. And that investment flow needs to happen right now as well.
Well, Vina, we need to put it down there. What I'll do is I'll put up links to both the June 2020 and your new report in the blog at the massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions about the show, you can send me a podcast to podcast@massclimateaction.net. And Vina, if someone wants to check out Ceres, what website would they go look at?
www.ceres.org.
Ceres.org.
That's right.
Super, super, super. Quote, you can listen to the show on your smartphone using all the modern podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to it on their iPhone using their favorite modern podcast distribution app. We want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support. We want to close where we always close by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So Vina, thank you so much for being here. It's been a fascinating discussion.
This was really fun. Thanks very much.
Thanks everyone for listening. We'll talk again soon.
Very cool.